You're listening to the MLB At The Plate podcast, presented by eSurance, official sponsor of Major League Baseball. eSurance, insurance for the modern world. We're giving you the best content from each episode of MLB At The Plate. MLB At The Plate airs weekdays from 7 p.m. to midnight Eastern time on TuneIn.
Welcome into the MLB At The Plate podcast, presented by eSurance. I'm Holden Kushner, and today I'm joined by JP Arencibia. We're going to start the podcast with the MLB At The Plate Triple Play, which is where JP and I discuss three topics that interest us. Tonight, our Triple Play consists of discussions involving Kershaw and Scherzer and who's better right now, how players deal with a language barrier, and Major League Baseball allowing nicknames on the back of jerseys.
The MLB At The Plate Triple Play, presented by eSurance.
Now let's talk about him and Kershaw for a second, because coming into tonight, so this will be before tonight's start where he's completely dominating the Mets. And you just look, let's look at the old school stats first. If people are into, you know, wins and losses and such and such, he's 7-4 this year. Somehow he's lost four games with a 3.01 ERA. Now, if you look at FIP, fielding independent pitching, he's at 2.96, which, you know, makes it even better than it looks right now. His batting average with balls in play. Now, normally, you know, it's a 305. He's a little above league average there, so things are fine there. Strikeouts per nine, how about 12.2 strikeouts per nine, two walks a game, home runs per nine, 1.08. And what does that mean? Well, last year was at 1.22, and he gave up a ton of home runs. So he's even brought down his home run rate at this point. He's got so many pitchers that are working for him. And, you know, I still think everything works off his fastball like a lot of pitchers. Last year, he gave up 31 home runs and led the league. This year, he's given up another 11. So, listen, if there's one thing about Scherzer, he gives up some home runs. But when you're throwing 96-mile-an-hour fastballs, once in a while, a good major leaguer is going to catch up with him. They've hit that six of them so far. His strikeout rate has actually gone up. It's the second highest of his career. It is at 35.1%, which is remarkable. He's striking out 35% of the batters he's seeing, JP. 35%, and he's 29% strikeout to walk. And these are just stats I'm throwing out at you. He is just remarkable. And he's having a better season right now than he did last year as the Cy Young Award winner, is the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, well, for me, again, what, I don't know, FIP, DIP, LIP, I don't know, all these
not new SPLIP.
Yeah, I don't know all these new, these different stats. What I look at is the way he pitches, the way he attacks hitters. He's throwing that nine. The reason why he gives up home runs is because part of his arsenal is to throw that fastball up in the zone. So he throws that fastball up in the zone, which gets a lot of swings and misses. But sometimes when you're trying to go up in the zone with that four-seam fastball, get that rising kind of look, sometimes you miss low. And when you miss low, you miss in the middle of the plate, and that's why you give up those home runs. That's what happens there. But you go, he's got a curveball that all of a sudden he didn't have. When I played with him in college, in the USA national team, he was a fastball slider changeup guy, usually fastball slider. Well, now he's got fastball, a very, very good slider. His changeup has become possibly his best secondary pitch, and he's got a curveball, and he just continues to pitch on all four quadrants of the strike zone, which is fastball up and away, fastball up and in, fastball down and away, down and in. He does a really good job of being able to control all parts of the strike zone with a 96, 97, 98 mile an hour fastball, and then three other pitches that are above average. That's why he's become so good.
He's just great. I mean, again, he might be the best pitcher in baseball. I'm still going to give it to Kershaw, the body of work there. And then you see what he's doing this year. But Kershaw is 9-2 with a 2.23. If you just look at the old school, fielding independent pitching, a little bit higher. He's gotten some decent defense there, 3.21. Ks per nine, Scherzer has more Ks per nine, less. Kershaw, of course, has less walks per nine, too, at 1.48. And he's given up a career high right now, 1.2 home runs per nine, which is astronomical. Just to put this into perspective here, last year he gave up less than 0.48 home runs per nine. So his home run rate has gone up, you know, like 60-something percent. And that is alarming. I wonder why that is. Maybe it's just bad luck is what it is. But you just look up and down with Scherzer. I think he's more dominating than Kershaw. Kershaw is still the best pitcher in the game. And I think the numbers over time have said that. But if I asked you, who would you want for the rest of the season, including the playoffs? Scherzer or Kershaw? Who are you taking?
Oh, I'm going Scherzer in the playoffs. I don't know. I mean, you know, Kershaw hasn't been great in the postseason. Right now, for me, the way that Scherzer is pitching, I take Scherzer. If you go over a, you know, sample size of a career, it's definitely Clayton Kershaw's by far. I mean, his statistics are insane. I mean, they are. I mean, he could arguably be the best pitcher of all time. But right now, I think at this point, Max Scherzer is out pitching him in the near future. Do you? I mean, or in this past, you know, the present. Do you not agree with that?
Going back to last year, I mean, it really comes down to the playoffs. That's what it is. You know, Scherzer has been good in the playoffs. He's 4-4 with a 3.74. If you're just looking at it from that perspective, that's good. He gave up 3 runs and 6 1/3 in a World Series start. That was good, right? I mean, that's pretty good. He's been tremendous in the division series, in the championship series. He's been okay. I mean, if Kershaw did what Scherzer was doing, I think that they'd knock they'd knock Kershaw because he hasn't been lights out. You know, he hasn't been lights out in the playoffs either. But last year he had 2 starts and he gave up 5 runs, and those starts came up against the Dodgers. So I don't know. At some point in time, Kershaw's getting that. He's getting that that monkey off his back.
Yeah, and you can't hear. Listen, at the end of the day, if you have those two guys going on the mound,
mm-hmm.
I'm betting the farm on one of those two guys. So it's not like you're comparing two different starters or a Verlander now as opposed to a Verlander when he was throwing 98 to 100 for 9 innings. I just think they're both so special. One's a righty, one's a lefty, which also makes a difference with matchups and facing teams. But I mean, they're both just unbelievable pitchers.
I mean, they went head-to-head game one of the division series last year, which was, I mean, so memorable for me just seeing the two best out there. But, you know, Kershaw gave up 3 runs in 5 innings, and Scherzer gave up 4 runs in 6 innings. So, I mean, I think Kershaw was a little bit better. Scherzer gave up 2 home runs. Clayton Kershaw struck out more. He struck out 7 and 5. So, you know, to that end, it was a nod to Kershaw, although again, it's not like either one of them were terrific in that game.
Playoffs give me Bumgarner.
Yeah, of course. But then Kershaw gave up 5 runs in 6 2/3 in game 4. He pitched much better in that line, and he struck out 11. But again, you are picking hairs. I'm going to go Kershaw. I just think he's the best pitcher in a game. Scherzer on any night can dominate you. And although Kershaw is giving up more home runs this year, that's the one thing about Scherzer is he just gives up more home runs. And if I'm in a playoff game, one swing could kill you. There you go. But you know what? It's easier to, I think, argue that Scherzer's your guy because of Kershaw's failures in the playoffs. Yeah, simple as that. But go look at his numbers. He historically having a career that is among the handful of the greatest pitchers in the history of the game.
Oh, I definitely don't even have to look. I know that's for me. I mean, that's for sure a huge lopsided victory in Kershaw's. But the good thing is we could literally sit here and argue every single part of their careers, and you'd have good arguments on both sides. So my biggest thing is that's just how special these two guys are, is that they're so good that it's tough to kind of really separate them. I mean, because then if you look at them compared to everybody else, then there's a lot of separation. But those two guys, tough to separate.
Yep, they're terrific. And Scherzer's going to be the first Hall of Famer with a Nationals cap on. That's just going to happen. Scherzer's on his way there. He's got Cy Youngs in each league, and you know he's great. He really is a great pitcher, and he will go down as one of the best of his era. And we'll see. Kershaw's got some work to do in the playoffs, but he's still relatively young in his career as well. Wilson Contreras and Koji Uriara were laughing at each other right after David Freese struck out. How do you communicate with guys when they don't really know the language well? Uriara had to have picked up some English then, right? And Contreras has very good English. We talked with him at a World Series. But haven't you pitched with guys that just have really almost no English skills where you could talk with them? Because at least you know Spanish. If you've worked with a Japanese pitcher or somebody else that You couldn't communicate with verbally?
Come on now. What kind of question is that? I play with the Rangers. We got Yu Darvish.
That's right. How'd you do it?
I mean, he was good enough. He knew enough English to get by. And we would talk with the translator before innings to know what we wanted to do, what kind of plan that we had. But, I mean, yeah, it definitely is. It makes it a much tougher conversation, especially when you have to go out there and you have to talk to the pitcher and you don't really speak the same language. What are you going to get done? I've had to translate conversations for a pitcher and a catcher in the dugout. Sometimes they're not good conversations. Sometimes these guys are pissed off at each other. So it's like, I'm the guy in the middle going, okay, this is awkward, but it happens, and I'm sure that O'Hara knows enough English to get by, especially he's probably turning 50 here in the near future, so I would imagine that he knows enough English.
Yeah, well, I really wish I could be around you translating an argument between a pitcher and a catcher.
Try translating a manager bringing in somebody who doesn't speak English and having to translate him getting fined $500. Now that's even more awkward. You're like,
hold on, when did that happen?
Many times. I've had to go into umpire or to manager's offices and translate for guys, and I've just been sitting there. And Spanish guys will say things, and I've changed what they said so that it doesn't get any worse, because sometimes what they're saying is what they're feeling and probably not the right thing to say at the time. So, you know, I would just kind of dumb it down a little bit, like, oh, yeah, he understands. Okay.
Was there any time you let it fly, though? Just let the guy say exactly what he was saying just because it was just like, forget about it.
A lot of times, but there's sometimes, you know, that I know that the guy's upset. You just have to know who you're dealing with and what he can say and cannot say. Some guys have more leeway, but, you know, there's times where I've definitely had to kind of not say exactly what the person was saying, because if I did, there was going to be more issues.
Well, that's just terrific. Now, you obviously had a big upper hand because you're bilingual right there with English and Spanish, but there's plenty of guys in this league that only speak one language. I mean, on both sides, just English or just Spanish. So having a guy like you around obviously is a big boost. And then in Texas, as we've discussed a million times, I mean, Adrian Beltre, the fact that he can be a leader and a guy that has come from the Dominican Republic and really bring the whole clubhouse together. This is not some Mike Schmidt comment where he's saying Odubel Herrera could never be a leader. No, it's not like that, but there's a definite challenge. It's tough to lead a team when you don't speak English, right? And
no
Adrian
doubt.
Beltre has learned how to do it.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's tough. It's not that it's leading a clubhouse in a sense. It's how can you communicate? As a leader, you have to communicate. You have to bring guys aside. You have to pull them aside. You have to be kind of the one who's not necessarily holding court, but that is able to say things when need to be said. You know, Edwin Encarnacion, an example. Is he a leader by the way he goes about things? Yeah. Is he a leader in the clubhouse? No, because he can't communicate. He doesn't speak English well, so he doesn't really say it. Now, if it's a Latin guy, he'll be able to communicate and talk to him and keep them under control, but it's different for Edwin Encarnacion having to go up to Colby Rasmus and say, hey, clean it up. The communication's not there, so he doesn't feel as comfortable. You know what I'm saying?
As you saw earlier this week, Major League Baseball took the fun police and told them to go away because they are going to allow players to wear cleats, whatever color they want. They're going to have nicknames on the back of their jerseys. And this is what we're doing. I think that Commissioner Manfred gets it. I was very critical of Bud Selig. I thought Bud did some great things. I also think that, you know, toward the end of his reign as the commissioner, there was just no sight toward the future. It was just very old and stale. And now we're starting to see a commissioner that looks at the young people and says, oh, hold on a second. Let's try and reach them. JP, this is exactly how you reach them. You do fun things like this.
Well, I think as well, the Players Association, you know, pitched this to them and they allowed it, which I think is great. It's the Players Weekend, I think is what they're calling it. And so they're allowing guys to, like you said, have fun in the game. The game has become so just like gentleman sport and all these different things that it's not as interesting. It's kind of boring to watch in a sense. That's why UFC has become so big. There's a lot of different sports that are becoming big because of the aggressiveness. Hockey, you watch hockey, there's fights, there's different things. In baseball, it's just like, oh, yeah, well, every single day, same thing. And there's so many games that it's good to break up the monotony of baseball and to be able to have these guys let their personality show through and have fun. So I like it, and I imagine at some point there'll be more of it. Obviously, you've seen NBA has been doing it for a while, so now baseball's getting on that train.
Good. They should be getting on that train.
You're listening to the MLB At The Plate podcast, presented by eSurance, and we'll be right back with more after this.
Catch tomorrow's baseball starts today with Minor League Baseball on TuneIn. Throughout the season, listen live to the home calls of more than 160 minor league teams. From Class A to AAA games all across the country. With Minor League Baseball on TuneIn, hear top prospects take the field before they get called up. Listen in as players work their way back to Major League Baseball during rehabilitation starts. And catch your favorite minor league players and your favorite teams in action, including Tim Tebow. Listen to Minor League Baseball all season long on TuneIn.
This is the MLB At The Plate podcast, presented by eSurance, official sponsor of Major League Baseball. Here are your hosts, Holden Kushner and J.P. Arencibia.
There were 15 games on Friday evening, and to quickly recap them all, we got the best day ever, home run tracker and statistically speaking. But first, our Friday feature presented by eSurance, the save of the week. It is time now for our Friday feature.
Time now for the save of the week, presented by eSurance, official sponsor of Major League Baseball. eSurance, insurance for the modern world.
JP, we got a few plays this week, and we're going to let you choose which play was the eSurance save of the week. We got the Red Sox with a pair of walk-off wins against the Phillies. Pedroia on Monday, Benintendi on Tuesday. We had Miguel Cabrera's ninth inning walk-off on Thursday, in a 5-3 win over the Rays, his first walk-off home run since 2013. Curtis Granderson had an eighth-inning solo home run, 300th of his career, and it broke a 4-4 tie with the Cubs. And after taking a 4-0 first-inning lead, Aaron Hicks prevented the game from being tied by robbing Luis Valbuena of a would-be grand slam. JP, which highlight would you like to hear? Which one do you think is the eSurance save of the week?
I'm going to go with Aaron Hicks, because he prevented that grand slam from being hit. So I think that's the save of the week.
All right, JP, let's take a listen back to the play that you decided was the save of the week, presented by eSurance.
And here's the 2-1. Swung on a high drive to deep center. Back goes Hicks. He's on the track, near the wall, leaping, and he made a phenomenal catch. He robbed him of a grand slam. Maybin scores on what is a sac fly. Hicks went to the center field wall, put his glove on a jump over the wall, and made the catch, or this game would be tied. Valbuena came that close to hitting a grand slam.
Hicks is having a coming out party this year. That was the save of the week, presented by eSurance. eSurance, official sponsor of Major League Baseball. eSurance is insurance for the modern world. Let's now talk about the guys that we thought were the performers of the night in a segment we call
Best Day Ever on MLB At The Plate.
Who's your pitcher? Who is your pitcher, Mr. Arencibia?
I'm gonna jump on the Chicago White Sox train today, because okay, Quintana went out there. He went 7 innings, 5 hits, 2 runs, and he gave up the 2 runs he gave up were home runs. So you imagine that happening in Toronto, and bounce back after what he's been doing lately from a little bit of a struggle fest. So I'm going with Quintana.
Jose Quintana is your best day ever. I'm going Tyson Ross. I mean, the guy comes back. He had thoracic outlet surgery last year. His last start was April of 2016. And for him to go out and perform like he did, he threw 95 pitches tonight. He ends up going 5 2/3, so he takes it into the sixth. 2 hits, 2 runs, 3 walks, 5 strikeouts. He gets the win. Tyson Ross, best day ever. What about at the plate? This will be an interesting one. I had a tough time figuring out who I wanted to take. Who'd you take?
I've felt the same way since the beginning of the day. I'm going to also stay with the Chicago White Sox and Melky Cabrera with the five ribbies. Anytime you have 5 or more ribbies in a game, it's pretty impactful. He went 2-run double and a 3-run home run. For me, that's production right there and some power. So I'm going Melky Cabrera.
I'm going to go with DJ LeMahieu. DJ LeMahieu, again, he is starting to come around, and he is 4-for-4 with a couple of RBIs, a walk, and a stolen base. LeMahieu's just, he's got a double and just a bunch of singles, and now that he's getting on, he's really helping his ball club out so much because he was in a funk to start the year. But the way Arenado's hitting, to get that guy on base, and he had 12 RBIs in 12 games coming into this game, and now he picked up another pair. We're going to go with DJ LeMahieu, 4-for-4, with a walk, a couple RBIs, and a stolen base. I predicted we'd have 48 home runs tonight, okay? 48 home runs. We just had our 46th home run, and we got three games in progress. So we'll see if I'm on the money. If so, I'm playing the lottery tomorrow. Time to recount all of the home runs.
MLB at the Plate Home Run Tracker.
Ian Kinsler started things off with a 399-foot blast. Jock Peterson went 378. Matt Wieters and Michael Taylor of the Nats went back-to-back. 397 for Wieters, 355 for Taylor. Kendrys Morales of the Blue Jays, 417. Paul DeJong, Will Myers, Steve Pearce, Hunter Renfroe, and Alex Avila all going yard. Justin Bour hit his 17th home run of the year, a 435-foot blast for the Marlin, who just came off the disabled list. A two-run blast for Anthony Rendon, went 379, and Cameron Rupp, 379. It was Josh Bell hitting one 418 for the Pirates. Travis Shaw hit the longest home run of the night, 449, 107-mile-an-hour exit velocity. Three-run blast for Edwin Encarnacion, 439 feet. Joe Panic going yard. Matt Carpenter hitting one at Camden Yards, 393 feet. And Melky Cabrera, hardest hit home run at 110, exit velo 383 is the feet-wise. Okay, we got Dexter Fowler going yard, Gregor Blanco, and Jose Reyes hit one 389 off a slider from Max Scherzer. Tommy Pham tied Melky Cabrera for the hardest hit of the night, 110-mile-an-hour exit velo, 424-foot blast. Robinson Chirinos, Denard Span, all going deep. Keon Broxton, who hit one 489 a couple of nights ago, hit one 425 tonight. Devin Mesoraco, Jed Jerko, Jay Bruce, all going deep. Trey Mancini, the Orioles, goes yard again, 435-foot blast, 108 exit velo. Eddie Rosario continues to hit home runs. All this guy does is hit for the Twins, 349 and 97 off the bat on Prince night in Minneapolis, where everybody had the 10,000 purple umbrellas they gave out there. That was pretty cool. Justin Smoke hit one 409. Jeff Samardzija in Coors Field. The Giants pitcher goes 446. Brian McCann's home run went 402. Ian Desmond, 373. Cargo, he's in a three-way tie for the hardest hit home run with Melky Cabrera, Tommy Pham. Cargo went 409 and 110 exit velo. Aaron Judge, for Aaron Judge, this is just a little pop fly, right? His homer went 379, 105 exit velo. Jared Dyson, homers again, 407. Yanhervis Solarte, 367. Mookie Betts, the go-ahead homer on the top of the ninth for the Red Sox in Houston, 394 feet, 98-mile-an-hour exit velo. Trevor Story, Lorenzo Cain, Manny Pena, all going deep. Eric Thames, walk-off. How about 372 and 104 exit velo? Chris Carter and Cliff Pennington going yard as well. Pennington shot to break up Ian Kennedy's perfect game in the sixth, went 401 feet. Let's move on to the stats.
Statistically speaking.
So the White Sox have had two first-inning triples this season. Jose Abreu has both of them. Michael Taylor's second home run in as many games. He had one home run in 36 games against the Mets prior to yesterday. Alan Hansen, first White Sox player to get a hit in each of his first three innings of a game since Juan Pierre in 2011. And tonight is the first time in 25 games the Cardinals have scored eight runs. That same period, their opponents played it eight or more runs five times. Think about that, JP. They scored eight runs tonight, but over the last 25 games, their opponents have done that five times, eight or more runs.
No bueno.
Very good. Dynamite drop.
In.
JP.
Drop in.
Dynamite drop in, JP. Paul DeJong joined Bob Gibson and Dizzy Dean as the only Cards ninth place hitters with three hits, three runs, three RBIs, and a home run in the same game since 1913. See, now this is a flawed stat because that's when the pitchers used to hit ninth. That's an unfair advantage for Paul DeJong. Six runs is the most ninth inning runs in a game by the Cubs since they scored seven back in 2015. It was Kyle Schwarber's first major league start. It also had a Chris Bryant grand slam in that game. Max Scherzer, first in Expos Nationals franchise history with 10 strikeouts in five straight starts since Pedro in 97. Pedro Martinez, only two to do it in franchise history. Entering Friday night, the Royals had won five straight games by five-plus runs. Last team to win six straight by five-plus was the 79 Angels, who won seven straight. I don't even think I could name anybody on that team besides for Nolan Ryan. Maybe Bobby Grich was on that team?
I'd have no chance.
Yeah, I'm thinking, Nolan Ryan had to be on that team, that Angels team. Maybe Bobby Grich. The only other guy I could think of, 1979. Yes, he was still there. So two, and I don't even remember what Bobby Grich played. I just remember having one of his baseball cards. So there you go. Oh, he's an infielder. Okay, good. Moving right along, and statistically speaking. Zero of the top 10 players in home runs from 2016 are in the top 10 in 2017. How about that? Zero of the top 10 home run hitters from 2016 are the top 10 this year. Trumbo, Dozier, Cruz, Chris Davis with a K, Encarnacion, Chris Carter, Arenado, Bryant, Cano, Frazier. None of them
give
in
it
the
time.
Top 10.
Give it time. I bet you three of those guys will be in the top 10.
Not Trumbo. I don't think Trumbo's going to get there again.
Well, maybe not Trumbo. I said three.
I know. Talk about this. I think that's great that you said that. So not Trumbo. Probably not Dozier.
I think if Eddie gets hot, I've seen Eddie hit, I think he was at 13. He hit like seven home runs in a four-game set and finished off at 20 one year, or five home runs in a four-game set and finished off at 20. So he can get hot. Arenado, when he gets hot, he could go off.
Chris with a K. Davis.
Chris with a K. Davis can be one of those guys.
What about Nolan, Arenado?
I just said Arenado.
Right, and Chris Bryant, and that's about it.
Yeah, so I that's what I'm saying. I think three of those guys may be able to be on the list.
Craig Kimbrell has 280 more strikeouts than base runners allowed during his career. It's the greatest differential in baseball history. Kenley Jansen sits at 279, right behind him.
Where'd you get that stat from?
I'm thinking that was the ace of Spader.
Yes, that was the ace of Spader.
Yeah. He's been running that one for a while. But I didn't know Kenley Jansen had crept up so close either. And then Nick Turley of the Twins, 12 earned runs in his first two starts, most by a Twins pitcher in their first two career starts since Allen Benson in 1934. They had to be the Washington Senators then. So that's not good. Oof.
Not a good stat to be a part
not
of.
Not a good. You don't want. Exactly. You don't want to be a part of that. That's it for the MLB at the Plate podcast presented by Esurance. Make sure to join us on MLB on TuneIn at 7 Eastern each weeknight for MLB at the Plate. During the daily 5-hour show, you'll not only hear all of what you heard in the podcast, but you also have the chance to listen live to the games and get in on the action as it happens. For Abe and Dustin in the LA studio and JP Aaron CB alongside me, I'm Holden Kushner. We'll catch you on Monday.
Thank you for listening to the MLB at the Plate podcast, presented by Esurance, official sponsor of Major League Baseball. Esurance, insurance for the modern world. Catch us every weeknight on TuneIn, where we take you around Major League Baseball with live listenings, analysis, player interviews, and much more. Plus, be sure to check out our other great content on TuneIn, featuring the very best in sports, music, news, and talk. On TuneIn, get caught up in the moment with more than 100,000 music stations and 5 million podcasts from around the world. Exclusive sports content, including live MLB, NFL, NBA, and NHL games, and 24/7 news coverage from CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News Radio. Tune in, your everything audio app.